Hello, good evening, and welcome to Seascapes. On tonight's programme, we meet two inspirational young women embarking on careers in sailing, and that controversy again over large trawlers allowed back into our inshore waters. Pamela Lee and Kat Hunt are two young women who set off on Tuesday to sail non-stop around Ireland and to set some records on the way. They're making incredible progress. Roundabout now, they're somewhere off County Louth and they'll be expecting to pass their finish line sometime tomorrow morning. Pamela and Kat are embarking on careers as pro sailors and they've just returned after working in France on the Solitaire de Figaro race. They're among a growing number of women in pro sailing, and I went to Greystones in County Wicklow to meet them before they set off and to have a look around their boat.
Hi, I'm Pamela Lee. I'm from Greystones, which is where we are now. We're actually set in Greystones Marina on our Figaro 3, the same boat that's just done a solitaire and has come back from France with us. And we're just getting ready to take it around Ireland.
Kind of late in the year to be going around Ireland.
A little bit, although we were working with a navigator and weather router, Miles Seddon, and he was actually like, October, a good month. So, you know, okay. He's positive. But also there's a few things at play, like the timing of the project is, I've been working on the boat all summer with Kenny Rumble, who did the solitaire. So we know the boat well, we know she's ready to go to sea, she's kind of proved that. So all of that comes into play a little bit. And then also the availability of the boat, because Marcus Hutchinson has kindly donated the boat for the cause, and other times of the year it'll be snapped up for other things. And then also, yeah, so kind of capitalising off the back of what I've learned and experienced this summer, but also, you know, with everything that's gone on this year and not so many other things going on, it felt nice to kind of finish the sailing season with a little bit of a project and a little bit of energy. And you know, we'll just do our best to get round, and maybe next year we can come back with a better time of the year and beat whatever we do this year. So, you know, basically we're just doing the last bit of prep on the boat at the moment.
You're going to wait for weather.
Yeah, exactly. Really, it's, well, at the moment we get the boat fully ready to go, which we're hoping to have by basically the end of the day. And then we're kind of, you know, ready and waiting. And it's a little bit of looking at the weather and how it's going to form and then just setting off.
Going around Ireland, it's about 750 miles.
A little bit less, actually. I think it's just under 700 with the world speed sailing record course, because we get to go inside a few rocks that you don't on the Round Ireland. So yeah, it's a fairly long one, actually.
I've done the Round Ireland myself, but my slow record is 6 days. How long do you think it will take you?
Well, we're hoping the current under 40 foot monohull record is 4 days and something. So we're hoping to, if we could get under that, that'd be absolutely awesome.
And you can go around either way.
We're docked here in Greystone, so we're going to sail out of Greystones. But for the world speed sailing record, the start line is actually between Kish and Dunleary South Pier. So that will be our start line. And yeah, we can go either north or south, which is really cool, actually, because it gives us the flexibility to work with various weather windows, a bit more on like flexibility on that. And kind of the main goal really is to, you know, get around in good time, but also enjoy ourselves and do it safely. Currently, there isn't an official world sailing record for either double-handed around Ireland or female. So if we do a good lap and we get around safely and we enjoy ourselves, we'll have our names on both of those records for anyone else to come and beat us next time.
You're not alone, because Kat, you're coming as well.
Yeah, hi. I'll be Pam's co-skipper. So Pam and I both met only about a month ago, yeah. I guess, out in France. We were both working as preparators, so a shore team for different skippers in the solitaire. And we bonded over both being two females and both speaking the same language, I think. And we both realised we've got similar ambitions with what we want to do with our sailing career. It's kind of went from there, really.
You mentioned a sailing career. How do you establish a sailing career?
Establishing a sailing career, it's a hard one. I think in offshore sailing, there isn't a set pathway to get there. It's a lot of putting yourself out there, trying different things. You might go down one route and then have to go down another. But it's just building sailing experience, I think. And I think what Pam and I both want to do is give other girls who are aspiring to do something similar an idea in their head that it is achievable, and you can go and skipper a boat, you can go and sail shorthanded and achieve something like that.
What's your background in sailing that got you this far?
So I started in sailing dinghies when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and then moved into keelboat racing on the south coast. And I did my first offshore race when I was 17, and I loved it. I loved the, I guess, the extremes and the discomfort of doing offshore sailing.
Discomfort is the word that comes to mind in offshore racing.
Yeah, and a boat like the Figaro is not comfy at all. It's fully stripped out. We've got a little jet boil to cook on, which so we can basically boil water for our freeze dry. I'm actually a final year university student in Southampton, so juggling that at the same time. And it's definitely not a career yet, but I think just doing all the little bits of sailing I can will hopefully build me up to do that. So.
Pam, you've been working on this boat full-time all summer. What's your sail path been?
My sailing path? Well, I started off my dad, Norman Lee, is a very enthusiastic GP14 sailor. So he's just...
Which are small boats.
14-foot boats, two people. So I started off just literally like in the water, messing about in dinghies. We had a few family toppers and I just remember... We'd go out and, you know, we'd all cling onto the mast and Dad would do like a turtle capsize and we'd all get swept up the other side. So I think a big thing for us was just eliminating that fear of the water, having a respect for that fear. And then from then I went on and I did my sailing courses in Loch Derg Sailing Club, you know, worked my way through them, having a really good time, and racing in the mirror circuit. I always quite enjoyed having another person on the boat with me because I do like to chat. and from there I went on, did my instructors and all of that, and then team racing for DCU. And basically, the next step for me was that I moved to Sydney, and there I just got a taste for the offshore sailing scene. They've got a great offshore sailing scene. It's called the Blue Water Point Score, which is basically a load of lead-up races that finish in the Sydney to Hobart. So I set my sights on the Sydney to Hobart and just started trying to get on boats one after the other, and eventually landed with a team called Black Sheep with Derek and Marty Shepherd. And they really just gave me my chance, took me on, kind of taught me anything that I wanted to learn. As long as I was keen, showed up on time and, you know, came on the races, they were happy to teach me. So from there, I went on doing Sydney Hobarts and just really, really enjoying it. And then after that, I went, made the decision to go kind of into full-time sailing, I guess, but more on the yachty side of things. So I ended up out in the Caribbean and got lucky in Barbados, racing on a TP52, which was pretty cool.
They're pretty fast boats.
Yeah, that was kind of my first like high-speed powered up, this is fun. And then the next thing was I started working for Richard Matthews. He's a pretty amazing boat owner over in the UK. And he's got, I was working as first mate on his big Oyster 85. But he also had a lot of different race boats and we used to race on those as well. And I did that for almost 4 years. And then finished up there, came home and had plans to do, you know, Cork 300 and do the Round Ireland. And then, as we know, things changed. And at the same time, Kenny Rumble approached me and... he was originally meant to be sailing with Joan Malloy, who's done the solitaire as well. But she has just had her first baby, so hi to them. But in her absence, Kenny asked me if I was interested in jumping onto the double-handed stuff. One thing led to another, and yeah, we've been out in France doing the solitaire for the last month or so. And that's subsequently given me the training and the access to this boat to bring it back to Ireland and kind of... try to, you know, just communicate what we've been up to and the opportunities out there. And just, I wish that when I'd been growing up sailing in Ireland, I'd known about all these other options and these other avenues and these other boats that I could have kind of jumped into. And it was only later that I really learned it. And I just, by bringing this boat back and doing this and just having a bit of fun with it and showing girls that, like, we can skipper too.
We're going to take a look around the boat.
Yeah.
She's not that big.
Yeah, what is it exactly, Kat?
33.
There we go. Okay. Not huge. We've got a big bowsprit on the end as well.
We're going down below.
We have sails everywhere at the moment.
First thing, there's no furniture here.
No, I think the closest thing to the furniture is these bunks that you see on either side that actually, really, the sails get priority over us on that one. We do have two bunks, like kind of pub cots on each side, and they have these handy leverage systems, so you can hoist them up and down. But to be perfectly honest, we use them most of the time for either stacking sails or stacking our stack packs, which we use for extra weight, kind of depending on what angle of sail and how windy it is. So you might sleep on them, but you might sleep on the ground on top of a sail as well.
Okay. Because when you do this, when you take off, it will take you about 5 days, you hope. What's the sleep pattern going to be?
It varies a lot because it's one thing we've learned from hanging out with the solitaire guys who do this solo, so, you know, is there's a lot of kind of building up a sleep bank. So if you've got a good run and the wind is nice and your sails are set and you're happy with the boat, take that opportunity to get, even if it's not sleep, some rest and kind of relax, use the auto helm, because there's probably going to be another stage where you're going to need to be on the helm. So I think we're going to do a lot of trying to plan that. And if we know our weather windows, we'll know a little bit what to expect, so we can kind of strategize a bit. And then also we'll just be running a watch system between the two of us. So probably something along the lines of 2 hours off, 2 hours on. But I think max you're ever going to sleep is max an hour, maybe.
Electronically, it looks relatively simple, yeah, and uncomplicated. Now you have your radios, your various instruments, and a computer.
Yeah, it is. And that's kind of, one of the things I really enjoyed, why I think I enjoy about the Figaro or kind of race boats, like, they're really set up with what you need. None of the extra faff. You'll see here, we just have the big, you know, the main two batteries there. That's kind of it. And then they lead back. And then kind of just all set on the mast setting here. We've got all our electronics leading into like one screen. From the screen, it pretty much runs like a normal computer, except that it's waterproof. We run our Adrena navigating program on there and our weather programs.
The other thing I'm noticing is that your cooking facilities are pretty basic.
Yeah, we've got a nice little, basically just a little burner where we can boil about a litre of water. So we are pretty much on freeze dry.
Yeah. No luxuries.
No, not at all. Shout out to the Happy Pear guys in Greystones. They're going to give us some nice fresh food to take with us. So that's going to be cool, but pretty much freeze dry all the time.
Kat, we're back on deck. What your packing sails, what kind of sails are you carrying?
We've got a mixture of sails. This boat is an asymmetric design, so we've got asymmetric kites.
Okay, so for somebody who might know, what's an asymmetric kite?
Okay, so the kite is the big, usually colourful one that's out the front of the boat when we're going downwind. So we can carry, well, we're carrying two of those. We've got a big one when it's lighter winds, and we've got a smaller one when things get a little bit breezy. We then have...
And what does asymmetric mean?
Asymmetric means that we don't sail dead downwind with the sail. We have to kind of zigzag our way gradually downwind because the sail's on the side of the boat. Not got a pole that you've got to manage through the jibes.
So that's the secret with the asymmetric, there's no pole.
Yeah, exactly. We've actually got a bowsprit off the front of the boat, which you attach like the front of the sail to instead.
And how many sails will you carry?
Yes, we've got two jibs, which is the small sail at the front, and then we've got our main sail as well. We have two of the kites, and then we carry a code zero, which is sort of the for sailing when we're in a crossover between downwind and upwind, when we're going to kind of, we call it reaching in sailing. So we've got that as well.
How do they perform when you're going up to wind? Is the point of sailing that most sailors obsess about when you're going up against the wind?
So this boat, she does fight a bit going upwind. She enjoys she's quite a beamy, so like wide boat. And she's got these great foils as well, which do help, but she does prefer being reaching or downwind. That's her sweet spot.
So if you were going in the Round Island, if you're going south from here, the hardest part is from the Tusker Rock over to the Fastnet, because you're against the wind, prevailing wind most of the way.
Yeah, I think it's inevitable we're going to get some upwind at some point, but hopefully we can find a window. We've got as much downwind as possible and get a system and run with that.
Both of you, you're packing up, getting ready to go. When do you think you leave?
Well, at the moment, we're just kind of working with the navigator and weather guys to kind of see. There's a bit of a low coming in at the end of the week, and we're just not sure what that's going to do. It could kind of move in the right direction to make us a nice window, or it could get a bit angry, which means we kind of get a little bit stuck. But we're hoping, I mean, we want to go as soon as we can, but within reasonable. So we're hoping sometime to the mid of the end of the week we might be able to head off with a good window that looks safe, fun and fast.
If anybody wants to follow you on the way, is there a website they can look at?
Yeah, we're actually going to have a yellow brick tracker on the boat as well. It's part of the requirement for the record. So there will be a tracking link where you can literally see what we're up to. And then we do have on the website RL Sailing. There's a link to us on that. On the social media, it's at RL Sailing on the Instagram and then RL Sailing Team on Facebook. And we're also, what's quite important for this project is we're partnering with the Magenta Project, which is a global group of very awesome professional female sailors who really want to promote more opportunities for women and girls in sailing. And they're partnering with us as well. So on their social media, which is Magenta Project, if you search it, they'll be sharing our stuff too. And then there's, of course, Kat and I's personal stuff, but you'll find that through the links on the pages as well.
Just tell me something more about the Magenta group.
So the Magenta Project was set up by the crew of women who sailed around the world in the Volvo Ocean Race as Team SCA. So they're a pretty awesome group of women. And they've set up this this charity to encourage females who are sailing in dinghies and try and get them into professional pathways, into high level sailing, really.
Okay, because there is a career in professional sailing for women.
There is, definitely. And it's even more important now. We've seen some rule changes in some big events. In 2024 with the Paris Olympics, the double-handed class, the offshore discipline will be mixed gender, so you're going to have one guy and one female. And likewise with the ocean race, there's rule changes there to have compulsory mixed crews as well.
And it is a sport where women can compete equally.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the really interesting things about sailing is it's one of the only sports, or maybe the only sport, where men and female compete together and against each other on the same stage and on the same teams. It's not gender split. Also, it's not age split. Like for me, sailing, one of the coolest things is when you get to go out sailing with someone who's way more experienced than you, and you can learn a lot. So it's a really special sport in that way. And I think Kat and I both feel that with the bringing in of the double-handed offshore for the Paris Olympics, it really opens. There's suddenly going to be a drive to find female sailors who are, you know, have the skill, have the experience, and want to do offshore sailing, because now there has to be a girl on the team. So it just, as again, this we kind of just want to open it up and kind of let girls know that there is this new avenue and there's a chance for you to get on board and learn to not just sail offshore, but skipper, navigate, trim, do all the things, because on double-handed, you kind of, everyone needs to know everything. So it's a really, I think the future for offshore sailing for girls and female involvement is really good. And I think it's good to kind of spread these ideas and give some of the younger girls maybe a little bit more of a dream or something to shoot at, which is kind of what we're hoping to do.
Pamela Lee and Kat Hunt, and they're definitely going to set records on this trip, which could stand for a long time. We discussed on the programme last week how the High Court had overturned a ban on large trawlers operating within 6 miles of our coasts. The issue is causing huge controversy in coastal communities already, with pictures of large boats trawling in bays all over social media. Fury over inshore fishing ban lifted is how the Southern Star headlined the issue this week. Social Democrat TD for West Cork, Holly Cairns, is one of those who's been speaking out over the issue. She told me what had been happening since the ban was lifted.
There's a lot of outrage. I've been contacted by so many people who are just really concerned about it. And, you know, they're worried not just about the kind of ecological damage, but also the damage to the more small scale and family and island fishing families and enterprises and the effect that it will have on them. And then we've seen a lot of, if they hadn't won in court, I suppose the businesses would have been affected understandably. feeling very defensive and speaking out a lot about it. And I suppose I'm well aware that they aren't breaking any laws, and I'm not insinuating that they are. We know what happened in the High Court. But I am calling on people to, you know, regardless of the laws, that there's a kind of moral obligation there to respect the ecology of the bay and the smaller fishing enterprises that rely on that ecology.
You've posted photographs this week of large trawlers operating very close into shore in pairs.
I didn't actually post any of those photos. That was different people around West Cork who were understandably concerned about the pair trawling that's going on. And, you know, unfortunately, like we see often on social media, there was a lot of targeting of individuals in light of that, and that's not helpful either, you know. So my post was a picture of the bay. You know, Bantry Bay is gorgeous, and just highlighting the kind of the issues here. And I think it's worth noting that the High Court overturned this bill because of a technical issue rather than any actual problems with the bill. And, you know, there's a narrative now that I'm coming out against the fishing industry in this one. And, you know, that's really not true. The NIFA and the NIFO have said that this legislation being overturned is more of a threat and more damaging to inshore fishermen than Brexit. Obviously, there's a little bit of a divide in the fishing communities on this one. But I think what we're seeing here is what we always see in any sector under the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine, and that is when somebody speaks out against something that is very much based on science and the effect that that has, instead of a discussion going on around how we can deal with this situation, what policy might work to help everybody in the situation, what we see is a debate unfold whereby, you know, environmentalists are pitted against an industry. And that debate is very unhelpful, and it stops us from actually dealing with the problem at hand. You know, companies that are pair trawling in the bay, I think the income from that accounts for about 20% of their annual income, is what I'm hearing. However, 80% of the fleet nationally are smaller inshore fishermen who rely on those stocks for their entire livelihood. There's important issues from both sides going on, but we need to be able to address it without having a pointless debate about somebody being against somebody else. You know, we need to protect the ecology of the bay, and we need to protect people's livelihoods.
One of the issues here is that these big trawlers are fishing for sprat. They're a small bait fish. They're the lower end of the food chain for predators, from mackerel right up to sharks or whatever. There are non-quota fish, which means there's no restriction on the number or the amount you can take, and they end up as animal feed.
That's it, and I think some of the trawlers are also fishing them for human consumption, but there is some going to animal feed as well. I suppose we need a lot more clarity, and we need to know that things like the size of the nets are being monitored. You know, these boats, if they're pair trawling, could take in 160 tonnes in an outing, and that's, you know, that's an awful lot. And we know that this year has been an incredible year in terms of whale watching off the West Cork coast. It's featured on the RT News numerous times. It's been incredible. And they need sprat to feed on too. So there's, you know, there's economic and there's environmental and there's tourism. You know, there's lots of things we need to take into consideration here. I think given that the High Court ruling was overturned in a technical difficulty, it obviously needs to be revisited. And I'm calling on the Minister to revisit that immediately. And perhaps, like you say, there's no quota for it. Perhaps things like that need to be introduced as well, or maybe we need to look at exclusion zones for certain periods of time to allow fish stocks to replenish. But we certainly can't leave it the way it is. Something needs to be done.
How long do you think it's going to take to rectify this, or how long should it take? The last process took an awful long time.
I'm very new to politics, so I'm still figuring out how everything works, but everything appears to work very, very slowly. Oftentimes as well, like that, we see it time and time again, the lack of public consultation. That is why this was overturned. Of course, everybody should have been consulted during that time, and it's a massive mistake that this government consistently makes. We've seen it recently with the forestry bill as well. Instead of dealing with the consultation, they just try and remove that process, and it always fails. This is a perfect example of why not consulting is just poor policy making.
Okay, so where are you going now? The Green Party are in power. What are you saying to them?
I'm calling on Minister McConlogue and Minister Hackett to take action immediately, to look at, you know, revisiting the legislation. And does that have to go through the High Court? You know, there's a lot of stuff we need to figure out in light of that ruling. So basically just saying that we need to look at this immediately and we can't just ignore it. You know, really encouraging them as well to not take part in this kind of false narrative that any concerns about stocks is anti the industry, because obviously the industry needs replenished good stocks as well.
Social Democrat TD Holly Cairns. And I think, along with Brexit, this is the biggest issue facing the fishing industry at the moment. And that's it for Seascapes for this week. We're back at the same time next Friday. Everything on the programme is podcast and it's on our website, rte.ie/seascapes. If you want to contact me or the programme, the email is seascapes@rte.ie. If you're anywhere on or near the water over the next week, stay safe.